Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Emor. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Emor. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Emor. Today I would like to examine the opening sections, which speak of the holiness of the priests, of the Kohanim, and the laws regulating them, and connect these sections with the end of the parsha, which speak about the story of a blasphemer, and speak about certain basic laws of civil and criminal jurisprudence. Let us look at chapter 21, verse 1. In the opening verse, Moses is to tell the Kohanim a central law which governs them, the prohibition of not coming in contact with a dead body. In the succeeding verses, we are told the exceptions to that rule. The first exceptions are the seven close relatives for whom everyone observes laws of mourning, Shiva, as we are, the week of mourning. And they are one's wife, spouse, father and mother, brother and sister, son and daughter. There is a further exception, which appears in verse 4, and that is meit mitzvah. What is a meit mitzvah? Anyone who dies, who has no one to bury them, perhaps because they're in the middle of nowhere, perhaps because they do not have any relatives who would take care of their funeral. Such a person needs to be buried by anyone, including a Kohen. And in fact, burying such a person is a mitzvah, hence the term meit mitzvah. In verse 5, we are told an extension of these laws. The Kohen is not allowed to create a bald spot on his head. He is now not allowed to shave off his beard, the corners of his beard. He is not allowed to make scratches on his body. These were all practices of pagan cultures. At least the first one and the third one. Tearing out your head to the point where you make a bald spot. Tearing out your hair, excuse me, to the point where you make a bald spot. Scratching yourself were generally done in the context of mourning. Self-mutilation as an extreme expression of mourning. Hence, if we sum up these initial laws, the Torah is telling us that the Kohen expresses his holiness by distancing himself from death. And this is very logical and reasonable, because the role of the Kohen is to preoccupy himself with life. The Kohen serves in the temple. The temple is the place where God, the ultimate expression of life, is to be present. Having that I-thou encounter with life requires him to distance himself from death. Furthermore, in bringing the sacrifices, the Kohanim bring atonement upon the Jewish people, both individually and collectively. The purpose of the atonement is to give them a new lease on life. And even regarding those sacrifices, which are not meant for atonement, there is an element of life, because the word korban means karov, to come near. The purpose of any sacrifice is ultimately to bring a person near to God, so that the closer one comes to God, the closer they come to life. And that is the role of the Kohen, both on a personal level and as the mediator, the go-between, between God and the Jewish people. In verse 7, we are given a second set of regulations for the Kohen. Whom is he prohibited to marry? After being told in Leviticus chapter 18, whom the average regular Jew is not allowed to have a sexual relationship with, the Kohen, in addition to that, is given further restrictions. He cannot have a relationship with a zona, a prostitute, a chalala, a defiled woman, a grusha, divorcee. Right now, I will not get into the halachic definitions of what is a prostitute, what is a chalala, a defiled woman. Let us go a little bit further. In verse 10, the laws of the regular Kohen is taken to another level when we discuss the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. When it comes to the high priests, we are told in verse 11, regarding any dead body, he shall not come. To his father and mother, he shall not defile himself. If a regular priest is able to defile himself and come in contact with the dead body of his immediate relatives, we are told that the high priest cannot even to bury his father and mother. Furthermore, if we were told regarding the priests, do not make a bald spot as expression of mourning. Do not make scratches on your body. With regard to the high priest, we are told, do not let your hair grow long. Do not rip up your garment. These are what we do in the normal laws of mourning, so that the high priests not only cannot express the extreme form of mourning, even the regular expression of mourning, he is prohibited to do. And we are told, "Umin ha-mikdash lo yetzei," he should not leave the temple ground. Why? Because the temple is where the presence of God is. The temple is the sanctuary of life, so that he is supposed to be totally preoccupied with life. Let me point out, but there is one exception, Meit Mitzvah. Even the high priest, were he to encounter a dead body that no one else would bury, is obligated to bury that body. Then we go on in terms of marriage. Further restrictions. Verse 14, not only can he not marry the people who are prohibited to a regular priest, he also cannot marry a widow. Moreover, the Torah emphasizes he should marry a virgin. Twice the Torah says this. And when we read the closing section of this, the closing verse of this opening section, in chapter 21, verse 15, it says, and he shall not defile his seed, because I am God who sanctifies him. Which means that the Kohen has to be very, very careful who he marries. By marrying any of the prohibited people, he will be defiling his seed. I would now like to shift for a moment and see how the word defiling comes up a number of times in this section. In verse 4, it says, he shall not defile himself. And I will translate this as a husband among his people. Lahechalo, to desecrate himself. Okay, perhaps I should be careful. In the word to defile, I will connect with the word tuma, tamei. And desecrate himself, I will connect with the word chilel. So that perhaps rather than what I said earlier of defiling, really the word that I want to focus on is desecrating himself. And this idea of desecration comes up in verse 15, which I read a moment ago. Do not desecrate your seed. One of the women that the Kohen is not allowed to marry is a chalala, a desecrated woman. In verse 6, it says that the priest shall be holy to God. They should not desecrate the name of their God. So that what we have over here is the following. There seems to be an idea of do not desecrate yourself by coming in contact with a dead body. Do not desecrate your seed by marrying someone who is prohibited. Do not desecrate the name of God because you are holy to God. In the next section, which is chapter 21, verses 16 through 23, we are told that Kohanim that have physical defects should not approach God to offer the sacrifices. This is a prohibition. Nevertheless, we are told in verse 22, the bread of God from the Holy of Holies and from the holy they shall eat, which means that Kohanim who have some serious physical blemish, some physical, serious physical impairment, which is visible, are not allowed to function in the temple, to actually do the sacrificial service. But nevertheless, they still are Kohanim. Nevertheless, they still are allowed, and perhaps even commanded, to eat of the sacrifices. They still need to observe the laws of ritual purity. They still need to be strict regarding whom they marry. And I would even venture to say, based on rabbinic sources, they also will serve God, but not by bringing the sacrifices, but by eating of the sacrifices. And in the context of the Kohanim with physical disabilities, it says in verse 23, but to the curtain he shall not come in, and to the altar he shall not come near, because he has a blemish, and he shall not defile my holy places, because I am God who sanctifies them. And once again we have the idea of, not defiling, but desecration. Lo yichalel, he should not desecrate. Now let's look at the next section, which is chapter 22, which continues with the theme of the priests. In verse 2 it says, speak to Aaron and his sons, and let them separate themselves from the holies of the Jewish people, meaning the sacrifices, and let them not desecrate my holy name. Lo yichalelu, they should not desecrate my holy name. And then the section goes on to say that Kohanim should not partake of sacrifices, come near to sacrifices, when they are in a state of ritual purity. By doing so, they are desecrating those sacrifices. In verse 9, it says, they should guard my guarding. They should not bear a sin. They will die if they will desecrate it. For I am God who makes them holy. Again, in verse 15, they should not desecrate the holy things of the Jewish people, which they lift up to God. So I hope that my point has been well taken, that a word which seems to recur again and again in the context of the priests is desecration. Beware, do not desecrate. Desecration, which is the violation, which is the inversion of holiness. The Jewish people made these animals holy. Do not desecrate them. God says to the priests, I made you holy. Do not desecrate yourself. God says to the priests, do not desecrate your seed, your children. And then if we look at a concluding verse, in chapter 22, verse 32, it says, and they shall not desecrate my holy name, and I will be sanctified in the midst of the Jewish people. I am God who sanctifies them, sanctifies you, who took you out of the land of Egypt to be to you a God. And in fact, these verses are not only speaking to the Kohanim, but speaking to the general Jewish population. The concluding verse that I just mentioned speaks about not desecrating God's name. When we read the end of the Parsha, this is chapter 24, verse 10, we are told of a very literal desecration of God's name. It says in verse 10, "And the son of an Israelite woman, who was also the son of an Egyptian man, in the midst of the Jewish people, he goes out. And there is a dispute in the camp between the son of the Israelite woman and the Israelite man. And the son of the Israelite woman spoke out the name, and he cursed. And they brought him to Moshe. And the name of his mother was Shlomit, the daughter of Divri from the tribe of Dan." Here we have an example of someone, an actual story of someone who desecrates God's name, who first of all mentions God's name, and according to the rabbinic understanding, the tetragrammaton, perhaps not even the tetragrammaton, the special name of God, which was only to be uttered in the temple by the priests. And he is mentioning God's name in the context of a dispute with someone else. And he is cursing. And whether he is now cursing God, or whether he's perhaps cursing that individual by invoking God's name, although the general understanding is that he is not only invoking the name of God, but actually cursing the name of God, the most profound expression of desecrating God's name. And he is brought before Moshe, and the judgment is given that this man should be put to death. He should be stoned by the whole community. Here is a classic example of desecration of God's name in the most literal sense, which leads to death. It is very interesting that the one who does it, by virtue of what he does, not only desecrates God, but is in effect desecrating his mother. Interestingly, the Torah mentions to us, and the name of his mother is Shlomit Bat Divri. We are told and we emphasize her name, because by mentioning her name, she is being shamed by the actions of her son. His actions reflect back on his mother. Let me go back to a verse which I skipped earlier by the priests. In chapter 21, verse 9, it says, "And the daughter of a Kohen who begins to prostitute desecrates her father. She should be put to death by burning." I translated the word ki techel as she began prostituting. But techel is also related to the word chilul, which means she has a beginning, which is a desecration. So that here again, what you say is, I have a young woman who prostitutes, who then reflects back on her parent. We spoke earlier about parents potentially desecrating their children. Here are children who desecrate the parent. But let's go back to the blasphemer. That story too is not only of a child who desecrated the parent, but of a parent who desecrated the child. Because the Torah tells us that this child was the product of a union of an Egyptian man and a Jewish woman, an unholy, desecrated relationship. The rabbis in the Midrash create an elaborate story about how this came about. And in fact say that this Egyptian man was the man whom Moses slew in chapter 2 of Exodus. This is the man that Moses saw beating a Jewish man. He was beating the husband of this woman because this husband found out that his wife, in effect, had been raped by this Egyptian who snuck into the house, who in fact manipulated the situation that the husband should not be there so that he could come in and have sexual relations with his wife, so that this child was the product of a desecrated relationship. The Midrash goes on to say that perhaps to a certain extent, the mother even brought that upon herself. What's her name? Shlomit Bat Divri. Divri is related to the word davar, speech, words. Shlomit means shalom, peace, well-being. And Rashi, on that verse, which is by us, chapter 24, verse 11, says that this woman was a chatterbox. She would go around saying hello to everybody, but perhaps speaking in a way which was improper, which is maybe perhaps even inviting certain things. So what do we see here? We see here a situation of a desecrated relationship, of children that are born as a result of an improper relationship between parents, of parents who are desecrated by the improper actions of their children, and ultimately of God who is desecrated in the most profound way, in the most literal way, his name is desecrated. This story becomes the inversion of the beginning of our parsha. If we are told again and again that the Kohanim has been set aside to be holy, if we are told how careful he needs to be to not desecrate his seed, his parents, the name of God, his person, then in the end of the chapter, we have someone who's on the other side of the spectrum, who is not a Kohen, who is not fully Jewish, who in fact commits all these acts and is the product of these acts of desecration. If the whole point of the Kohen not desecrating himself is to promote life, to sanctify the name of God, the living God, when desecration happens, that creates death. And death, which ultimately is then reflected back on the perpetrator who is put to death. And perhaps in putting that individual to death, paradoxically, that can then make room for new life. Perhaps let me add one last comment. The Kohanim are involved in the service in the temple. In the service in the temple, their role is to exercise or invoke God's compassion on the Jewish people. The more that the Kohanim sanctify themselves, the more the Kohanim are infused with life, the more they are empowered to invoke compassion. Because God ultimately is a God who wants to exercise compassion, because compassion can further life. In the end of the story, in the end of the parsha, in chapter 24, when there is desecration, desecration which results in death, desecration invokes justice. There is no room for compassion. And that is why the concluding verses speak about Mishpat Echad, one set of laws, one set of rules, one justice system for all. Perhaps what we need to learn from our parsha is that not only the Kohanim, but each of us is commanded, as it says in the end of chapter 22, each of us is commanded to sanctify the name of God. Each of us is commanded to sanctify ourselves. Each of us is commanded to also think about not only ourselves, but what we do, how that affects our children. What we do, how that reflects back upon our parents, and therefore should be always thinking of, how do I sanctify God? How do I sanctify myself? How do I sanctify my past and my future? Sometimes we need to learn from extreme examples what we are not and what we should not become. And that is the end of the parsha. Sanctification is something which is a process. And the priests were meant to be the models to the general population. And today, we do not have a temple. We do have priests, but they don't play the same role as in the days of yore. Today we have rabbis. Today we have teachers. As an educator, as a rabbi, I constantly ask myself, to what degree is it that I am actually sanctifying God's name? Or to what degree is it that I am desecrating God's name? Each of us, in our way, should be a source of sanctification. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.